I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Glorious opportunity for Romo and the Cowboys. Tony, he lost it. It's right into the hands of Briggs. And Briggs is going. Being chased. Lance Briggs got a block from Jennings. And Lance Briggs with a second defensive score tonight for Chicago.
Welcome back to the Julie and Maggie Show. We are going to start the Miller Lite Top Draft Show right now because one, Lance Briggs has joined us here at Oak Forest Bowl on Cicero out in Oak Forest. Lance is going to be here until 8:30, so you got plenty of time to drop by and if you have specific questions for Lance. And seriously, let's hold the Marvel and comic book questions until the end. They're already starting to come in.
Yeah, we're already talking about them.
We're going to talk football first, and then we'll do Marvel and comic book stuff at the end. Some little DC stuff.
Independent stuff.
Independent stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
all the stuff.
All right, so Lance, here we go. First of all, like the post-game show that you guys do with Lawrence Holmes and Alex Brown and Matt Forte and Olin Kreutz. Am I forgetting anybody? I feel like I'm forgetting someone.
Matt Forte. No, you got
it. I got everybody. Yeah, okay. On NBC Sports Chicago is the absolute best post-game show on TV, and it is tonic for my anger and rage. I pretty much just raged myself to sleep in week one.
So, like many other Chicago fans.
Yes, yeah, and I slept for like 10 hours. I was just like a rage blackout, and I woke up the next morning. Now that we've all had a little distance from it, we've had 9 days since the last game.
Right.
How are you? I mean, obviously, we know what went wrong, right? The play calling was terrible. Mitch was not great. The offensive line struggled. For you, are these functions of not playing together in the preseason, or are there deeper problems here?
I think it's a combination of things. And again, you know, everybody, this is my opinion. You know, my opinion, it could be right, it could be wrong, you know, whatever. I'm just a guy who has plenty of football experience. but, you take notes from those that do it and have consistently done it well. So if you look at a team like the New England Patriots, all right, they are their quarterback, who is probably the greatest quarterback to ever play. He's the GOAT. All right? He plays in the preseason. All right? He plays in the preseason. You know? He gets his reps in the preseason. Does he need to? No, he doesn't need to. He doesn't. He's proven that he doesn't need to get reps in the preseason, but he does it. Okay? They're a team who's able to pick up the most divisive character in sports today, Antonio Brown. And they're the only team that could pick him up, and everybody will say, okay, it can work there. It definitely can work there. You know, they do things right in New England. So then you turn to a Mitchell Trubisky, who, you know, is coming into his third year, right? And one of the two major question marks for me for the Bears coming into this season are, one, the kicker, and two, the quarterback. Okay. As of today, right now, you know, I'm semi-satisfied with the kicker so far. You know, I love the kid's confidence. You know, the moment doesn't seem to be ever too big for him. Never seems to be too big for him. And the other question is the quarterback, you know, and coming in, the one thing that you want to see from the quarterback is you get as many reps as you can to prepare, you know, for this season. And you don't get it. And then when you don't get it and you don't perform in week one, you say that, well, we had great practices in preseason or in training camp. What does that mean to me?
Just reminds me of the Mark Trestman days. We heard about that all the time. I'm sorry. I don't mean to bring up the bad times of the past. All right. But like, that's always what we heard from Mark Trestman was like, but we practiced so well that week.
Yeah.
As if, you know. So, yeah. So what is the... What is the thing that really needs to go well more than anything tomorrow for them to win?
I think you just recognizing what your strengths are, you know, what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. In a lot of times when you in in this game, everybody thinks they're geniuses, you know, and everybody thinks that they have the answer, or they know the formula in order to do it, you know, in order to be successful, you know, and it's like everyone trying to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to do that. You know, there are simple ways to win games, or give yourself a chance to win at the end of games, because that's all you can really do. No matter how hard you prepare, you're just giving yourself a better chance to win at the end of games. And with that being said, what are your strengths? The Bears' strengths are their defense. All right, the Bears' strengths, it's their defense. Okay, they have plenty of firepower on offense. The question mark on offense is the quarterback. Okay. So if the question mark is on the quarterback, but you have plenty of firepower, then what do? You know, you limit or you reduce the impact that your quarterback can have. Run the ball. Set up play action. You know, you do the things. And the running back by committee, I'm not a fan of it. You know, it's not my team. That's their team, you know, and that's what they want to do. You know, but it's hard for any running back to get into a rhythm. If you keep having your every three plays, you're out, and then a new guy's in, and then you come out, and another guy's in, you know, you can have three good backs, but you got to feed one of them. You have to feed one of them so that they can get into a rhythm and they can start chunking away at the other team. So these are some of the things that I think, you know, that for the Bears, and then defensively, you have after a game like the week one, when you play as stout as you do, you have to go into that room and look at each other and say, look, defensively, we have to do more on our side. All right? We can't worry about what they're doing over there offensively. We have to take the ball away, and we have to score. You can't just jump on a ball and be happy because we got the recovery. That ball needs to be picked up. We need to get blocks, and we need to get into that end zone to take away any question marks that, you know, or leave it. Don't leave it up to the other side. There are plenty of things that we can do within our power, you know, and I believe that defense is good enough to do it.
You know, Lance, we were talking before the show started. There's so many issues that we have, and let's take them sort of in turn. The first one we were talking about was the play calling, which I think a lot of us are sort of befuddled by. It seemed almost as if he had so many, like Matt Nagy is, you know, wanted all these different kinds of running backs to use. It seems almost like he had so many tools, you know, with this huge wide receiver core. Riley Ridley can't even play in a game because they're, you know, taking a spot away from someone else if they do that. Mm-hmm. He seemed almost like he had too many weapons and he didn't really know where to go. And one of the things he said in the post-game conference was that he knew that he wasn't calling a balanced attack while he was doing it. So if you know you're not calling a balanced attack, then start calling a balanced attack. I didn't understand that.
The other thing that I don't understand is there were 30, what was it, 30? Something like 30 straight passing plays,
yes.
Pass attempts.
But some were RPOs, right?
Right, RPOs. But at the same time, you're down by a score for most of the game. And whenever things aren't working and you're not clicking, things aren't working, you're not being able to move the ball, you're having to punt a lot, or, you know, obviously you're just not being effective, you always go back to, all right, let's put together one good drive. You know, and this goes back to when you're a team, if you're getting blown out, you know, you're getting blown out by a lot of different points. You know, guys, they're beating you up by 20, 30, 40 points. You always say, all right, let's just put together one drive that we can score points, whether it be three or whether it be six. So this is a drive where you put together a balanced attack. You know, you run the ball. You set it up with play action. You might throw a short pass. You know, effective high percentage plays. Just to get your ball, just to get some confidence that you can drive the ball down and score. And when you're only down by a score, that would have been my thought process. Let's put together one good drive. Okay, we're not gonna try to throw the ball every play. We're going to put a balanced attack and we're going to run it down just so we can get some points, guys. Let's get some points out of this one.
Well, and when you see it be that unbalanced, it's not all that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it can't be that hard for the defense to prepare for that when they're, like, when the Packers defense is looking and they know, well, he's passed the last 15 times. Mm. I mean, how do you not, like, if you're on defense and you see a coach doing that, is that like saying, like, okay, this is dinner?
I'll give you a good example. Exactly, this is dinner.
Yeah.
That's the perfect point. I'll give you a good example. Minnesota Vikings drafted a quarterback in the first round. His name is Christian Ponder. And when we watched him on tape, he was a guy who we knew couldn't beat us with his arm. So it, you know, obviously they had Adrian Peterson back there running the ball, but it came, it became a situation where we were like, force him to beat us throwing the ball, playing quarterback. Okay, we're going to stop the run and force him to try to beat us because we know that he cannot beat us with his arm. You know, so if you get into a game, we get him to, if we get up a touchdown or two touchdowns on Minnesota at that time, we know that plays into our favor. Now we're going to get them to a point where Chris Ponder has to use his arm, he has to go back, drop pass, and throw that ball and read coverages. And we know we're going to get to him from pressure, and we're going to steal the ball from the throws that he's going to make. That's how I kind of see Mitch as an opposing player or opposing team or opposing coordinator going in and preparing for him.
You know, it's frustrating to see. We've been talking about Mitch Trubisky, and I'm a supporter, I guess, of Mitch Trubisky.
We all are.
I don't want to run him out of town. I really want to see him get better. I really thought this was going to be a week when this was going to be somewhere we'd see a big improvement this week. And going into the game, I said what I'm going to look for is if Mitch is comfortable in the pocket. And if he feels like, if he looks comfortable in the pocket, then I'm going to feel like there's an improvement over last year, because he never looked comfortable last year.
How did he look to you?
I mean, the first play, I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
When I saw it seems like he sees ghosts. It seems like he can't take his eyes off his first option out there. You know, this is year three. And when we heard all summer about all, you know, how great he was doing and how everything was slowing down for him and he was reading defenses better, I don't know what to make of all of that given what we saw on Thursday night.
That should have went in one ear and out the other. You know, it's a show me league. You know, it's a show me. You can tell me all the things you want, but what you put on tape is who you are. You know, and when you put things on tape and people come after a game, they say specific things about you. We knew if we made him play quarterback, we had a chance.
Yeah, that was rough.
You know what I mean? That's what you put on tape. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter how much you defend this or defend that. You know, there are things that you do, and you have to be able to adjust. There are things that happened to me, you know, during my career where, you know, I was having a lot of success, you know, shooting a gap here, shooting a gap there, and guys watch what I did on tape, you know. So they made adjustments, you know, and guys were stepping into certain gaps. I had to do something else. I was like, okay, this isn't working anymore. Okay, so now I have to do something else in order to get by these guys or trick them or get to the ball.
So how much realistically can he even get better over the course of 9 days?
Well, it's week one. I think for him, you know, again, everybody, this is just my opinion, all right? I'm just a player, okay? Ex-player, all right, that thinks he knows a little bit about football. You know, I think taking some of the pressure off of him, you know, taking pressure off of him and not putting him in a position where he has to use his arm to will us to wins, you know? You don't need to do that. There's enough weapons on the offense, I think, that you can get the ball out quick. You can run the ball, you know, You know, it doesn't sound flashy. It doesn't sound great, but it keeps your defense off the field and it keeps the clock running and it gives us a chance to win, you know. And if you can run the ball in Chicago, especially in December, then, you know, and again, that loss to Green Bay, you think about the loss last year and had the Bears have won that game and would have had home field advantage in Chicago. You know, it's a very tough place to play in January. You know, it's hard, especially you get those dome teams like New Orleans or Atlanta, you know, or any of those southern teams, those warm weather teams that have to come to Chicago. They don't want to come here in cold weather.
Well, we're going to take a quick break on that note, but when we come back, we're going to talk with Lance about what it means to play in Denver in week two. A lot of teams have struggled with week one and week two out at Mile High in the past. We'll get to that as soon as we come back. Julie and Maggie on the score, along with Lance Briggs at the Miller Lite Top Draft Show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Pair of receivers. He takes play fake, running out of the end zone. Being chased by Roach. Flings it. Diving interception. Lance Briggs at the 14-yard line of Seattle. What a play by Lance Briggs.
Well, there's a lot of that missing from the Bears on Thursday night in week one. I don't think there was a – was there a single interception, takeaway, anything? I didn't see one.
None.
That's but again, that's what I – that's one of the things – that one of the points that I was trying to make is you have to go in that room and you have to say, okay, defensively, do we rest our laurels on we played great or could we play better and how can we play better? And they can play better by taking the ball away, you know. You have to do what the team needs, and if you think you're doing enough defensively, because you're making a lot of stops or you're keeping their offense off the field, then your thought process is wrong. You know, it's always got to be about what you can do more. You know, and if you go out and you play a stout game, and you have a ton of plays, you make a lot of plays, and you lose a game. It should be burning in your head, you know, in your sleep. You shouldn't be able to sleep because you got to think about the plays that you missed, the plays that you think you could have made and could have changed the game.
That is the voice of Bears, seven-time Pro Bowler, linebacker, All-Pro, Lance Briggs, who's joining us out at Oak Forest Bowl for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. Lance is going to be here until 8:30 tonight. Yes, we are going to get to superheroes and comic books later on in the show. right now, though, we're talking about the Bears heading into Denver. Are you looking at your Wikipedia page?
There's some things that need to be changed in that.
I wanted to make sure
there's
I got the Pro Bowl number right.
That's a lot of WikiLeaks.
All right, now I'm going to scour it and see what you take issue with.
Try to figure that out.
It has my sister listed as my cousin, which is really weird. We both went to Arizona, University of Arizona. She went before me, but she's listed as my cousin. Is weird, right?
I just can never remember if it's 6 or 7-time Pro Bowler, so I wanted to check.
Oh, seven. And a 3-time All-Pro.
All right, there we go.
Who's counting?
We're out here for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show at Oak Forest Bowl. Like I said, Lance is going to be here until 8:30. If you have questions for Lance, you can text him to the text line at 670-11. So, Lance, we were talking before the break about heading out to Denver in the first couple weeks of the season and how tough it is for guys. I'm assuming you've played at Mile High at least once during your time with the Bears.
I played there a few times.
What was it like?
My rookie year, we played there in October. There was snow on the ground. But the one thing that you always are warned when you go there is, you know, the air is thinner up there. It's going to be harder to breathe. So you need to be ready, but you have to do it. Obviously you have to do it anyway. And, I remember we're starting that first opening drive. It was a 14 play drive. And on the 14th play, I remember, being in the huddle, and I knew, like, I have my specific place that I'm supposed to be in the huddle. Like, we always have our dress rehearsal, and I'm on the left corner. And I tried to, you know, I felt like I was where I was supposed to be. You know, one of the veterans, veteran D lineman, you know, Brian Robinson, was so tired. Everybody was so tired. And apparently I was in his way. So he moved. He was like, move. And I was like, he moved me, and I came back. I was like, but this is where I'm supposed to be. You know? And I remember Brian was so gassed. He was like,
So how do you prepare your team for that? I mean, they don't have the luxury of going 3 weeks early and acclimating to the weather.
You know, you just got to fight through it. You know, it takes some getting used to, you know, especially in the first quarter. You know, if you get off the field, if you can get yourself off, had we have gotten off the field, you know, in 3, 4, or 5 plays, we wouldn't have been so tired. You know, it was just a lot of plays that drove all the way down the field that you know, it's hard to recover. You know, you're breathing, you're inhaling a little harder than normal. So that's all it is. Guys will be fine. They'll be fine. You know, it's adversity.
So your Bears defense was definitely known for the takeaways. And it feels like this Bears defense is more about just they limit the yards and push you back. Mm-hmm. Not to be the bring out the cheerleader in me. But they – so, like – can they turn into the kind of defense that is more about the takeaways and scoring?
Well, I think last year they did a good job of taking the ball away, you know, and it was key, especially on the back end of last year, because the offense weren't scoring many points. And, you know, you look at those scores, and for most of those scores, you know, the defense was scoring at least one touchdown, you know, in those games. You know, Eddie Jackson scored a lot of touchdowns already, and he's had a short career in Chicago. So I guess to answer your question, if the mentality is to take the ball away and not to view it as a turnover, because turnovers are, those are anomalies, you know, those are the things that happen, you know, when guys aren't, securing the ball and they make mistakes on offense. Taking the ball away is the defense actively going for the ball. I screamed earlier today. I don't know which game it was. I was at this, Pogofsky charity softball game today, and I was watching. I think it might have been Mississippi State and Kansas State. And there was a ball that was out there. Guys were tackling a guy, and we're all watching it. And the guy's going down, you know, but he's flailing with the ball like this. And so the first thing that goes into my mind, they're like, "Oh, good place, good stop." I said, "They should have had the ball out. They should have taken the ball away. They'd have the ball now, you know, and they'd have it in their area and they're in kind of close to the red zone. And now you get at least 3 points."
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's just taking it to the next level.
In addition to Tremont Williams saying after the game that they knew if they could make Mitch play quarterback, they could win the game, which is sort of like, ouch, when I heard that afterwards.
Oh, man, burn.
But Anthony Heron, our buddy Anthony Heron, said that, you know, he's been told by guys around the league that they've all got a beat now on the Bears' schemes and that there's stuff that's recognizable and they're starting to see a pattern. How big of a problem is that going into facing Vic Fangio?
It's only a problem if you don't self-scout yourself, if you don't realize – the tendencies that you have, you know, I think it's important for you to evaluate yourself and say, okay, when we cross, you know, one of the heavy tendencies for New Orleans when I was playing, which they probably still have today, is when they get past cross the 50. As soon as they cross the 50, they get into the 40s. They always run a screen, you know, and we were playing them. We were put into a blitz, a zone dog, and they're at the 45. They had just crossed the 50 or into the 45, and of course they run a screen. You know, they ran a screen to our blitz, which actually sucked because we were gashed. We were wide open on that side. But there are things that ring true if you just watch your team. You pay attention to what they're doing and what they're trying to do. And I think Matt Nagy has shown the football world who he is and what he wants to do. So I think if he self-scouts himself and realizes, okay, these are things that I tend to do every game at these points in these moments, maybe I want to try something a little different to put a little ringer in that they're not expecting.
So we've been told that Nagy is going to throw out the playbook. Not really throw out the playbook, but you know what I mean, that he's trying to do a bunch of new plays that Vic Fangio hasn't seen, and he said there's nothing we're going to run that he has seen before. How do you feel about that when you've got a quarterback who we're not sure how good of a handle he has on the playbook that he's had for the last year?
Hey, you know, Fangio has been on the head coach watch list for a while. I've been on teams where we had an offensive coordinator that was with the Bears the previous year, or there was a player that we had that was with an offensive coordinator that recognized all of his calls and would sit on the sideline and listen to the calls from the sideline and tell the DBs, hey, here comes a post. Here comes a slant. You know, I remember Eric Weems, we were playing Atlanta, and he's sitting on the sideline. He's watching the signals. He's like, the signals are all the same. They haven't changed anything. And he's telling the DBs, hey, here comes the slant. You know, here comes the go route. Here comes this, because they didn't change. So, you know, if Fangio knew he was on the watch list 2 years ago, and he's like, I'm going to stay with the Bears, and he coached the Bears, anybody with any sense at all would know, okay, I'm going to pay attention to what they're doing over there. I'm going to pay attention to all the players here, and I'm paying attention to what they're doing in this system. So when these guys come up here this week, Bears come up here this week, there's things that they're probably going to be looking for, you know, that I know that they didn't change with the Bears.
Is that seen unethical in any way? Like, I don't know. I mean,
like, is there honor amongst thieves? Is that?
I mean, I'm wondering because, like, the idea of stealing signs in baseball is, like, insane. Like, they get very angry about that. And I'm just wondering, is it just, like, that's just the way it's going to be if you're dumb enough not to change your signs?
I mean, it's hard to change things like that, especially when you have so much in your playbook. But it's no, because offensive coaches always ask questions like, all right, so defensively, if you guys do this sign right here, what does this mean? Okay. And then what is your technique? You know, and they ask all these questions all the time about what's your technique. Oh, okay. And then they try to take advantage of other teams. But if you're the defensive coordinator on that team and you get a head coaching job somewhere else, those tips that you gave him, they're going to use against you.
Fair enough. You know, it's
all's fair in love and war, guys. You know, so if you can learn, the more you know, the better football player you can be. And if I was somebody who they told me, I can tell you, I'm going to tell you exactly what they're going to run each play, I'd be the best football player ever. Why not?
So back to the question, should we be concerned about Mitch having to internalize a whole bunch of new plays when his grasp on the playbook was questionable to begin with? just be honest, Lance. Just tell us.
Nah, you know what? Listen. We lost in week one, and guys, not just Mitch. You know, he wasn't the only person. A lot of guys didn't play well, and especially on the offensive side of the ball. But there, you know, it was only 1 week, and they have to bounce back this week and show improvement from last week to now, and that goes all the way around. That goes all the way around. It goes from, you know, the blocking. It goes from route running. It goes from decision-making from Mitch, from taking the ball away defensively, and play calling from the coaches, you know, motivation from the coaches and from the team. So there's a lot that I think has to go be in that we need to see this week, and it has to be a team effort, you know. And I don't want to put it all on Mitch. Because it's not. There are things that I may not like and we all may not like about Mitch's play. But Mitch is here, all right? And we need the best Mitch that we can get. So that's what we need tomorrow.
All right.
So you're not going to answer my question?
Nah. Yeah, I was definitely dancing around that.
That was a tango. So looking at the offense, not Mitch-related, I mean, as you mentioned, the quarterback or the running back by committee thing, there were three Bears that had more than one carry. And they had a total of 46 yards. So, I mean, obviously, yes, they're not getting the ball enough. But even when they do get the ball, they're not really seeming to do a whole lot with it. Do you think that is mostly because of the whole committee thing?
In my humble opinion, yeah, I do. You know, if you take the – so there were – I think Montgomery had five – or Mike Davis had five, or the other had six. You know, it was like 11 carries between the two of them. You take those 11 carries and you give it to one guy. You know, give it to one guy and let him get into a rhythm. Let him find some cracks. And let him chip away at that defense. And then we can find out if that's, you know, if it's working or not. But you can't, to me, you can't get a sense for or committing to the run game if every two or three plays you're rotating another running back. In my opinion, it just doesn't work that way. I heard the comment after the game, and that Mitch said, "Hey, we got three great running backs, and we need to feed them." I don't care how many running backs you have, how many great ones you have, you need to feed one. You know, you need to feed one, maybe two, but three is a crowd.
That is Lance Briggs, who is joining us out here for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show at Oak Forest Bowl on Cicero in Oak Forest. We've got another hour with Lance, believe it or not. We're going to turn our attention to what the Bears need to do tomorrow specifically. And a question about, I just want to talk to you about some of the comments we got from Eddie Jackson afterwards about the crowd booing. Say what you think about that. So we'll take a quick break.
I would love to hear this.
And we'll come right back. You're listening to Julie Maggie on the Score. It's the Miller Lite Top Draft Show with Lance Briggs.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We get it. We understand everyone wants to see him perform or offense do better or whatever the case may be. But I just feel like the booing part is just, it's unacceptable, you know. And I just feel like you're going to ride. If not, don't. You know, if you're going to call yourself a fan, you're a fan. But the booing thing is just, we don't like it as players on the sideline. Like, we get it. Okay, we get it. It's a Green Bay game. We get it. Okay, they're not playing as good as we know they can play. We get it, but it's just the same time we play good, you cheer. One little thing goes wrong, you boo. Like, you got to be on this side or you're going to be on that side. You get what I'm saying? It's not just we get it. We really understand. Like, it's nothing that no one in this franchise or in it, like the fans, get that we don't feel. You know, we feel it. Like, we wanted this game as bad as, like, you just don't know. We really wanted this game as bad, like, bad. We really wanted this one bad.
That was the voice of Eddie Jackson talking about the fans booing.
I feel you, Eddie. Well, look, I do.
We're out here at the Oak Forest Bowl with Lance Briggs for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. Going to be here until 8:30. So if you're in the neighborhood, stop on by. We're out here on Cicero Avenue in Oak Forest. All right. So, look, I have never seen the city so fired up for a Bears opener as they were on Thursday. The whole city, if you were downtown at all that day, was just vibrating.
Moly.
Everybody had Bears stuff on.
Right.
I feel like it wasn't.
People weren't at their jobs.
All people wanted to talk about all day was the Bears.
It wasn't even just downtown. I feel like literally everywhere I went that week, no matter if I was in the city or the suburbs, it was like, Bears,
yeah.
Bears.
Yeah. And so then to come out and have the performance they had, I get why people booed. So, and Eddie Jackson obviously took exception with it. Olin said last week he doesn't agree. He thinks that fans should be able to boo whoever they want. How did you feel about booing when you were a player, Lance?
I feel Eddie's pain. I get, like, every word that he said, you know, I can hear he really wanted to say a few other choice words, you know. But respectfully, he said it the way he said it. You know, he basically want, you know, don't be jerks to us. You know, don't be jerks to us. We're trying to fight for you. You know, things don't go our way. Things don't go the way that we all intended. It doesn't mean that our intentions are wrong. You know, but the thing about it, for any other Bears player, gotta have tough skin. Gotta have tough skin. You know, that's just the way it is. You know. Fans, they love you. They get emotional. They get very, very emotional. And when things aren't going well, they pay a ticket. They have the right to boo. If they don't like what they're seeing and they want to boo, and the thing about it is when you hear boos in a stadium, that doesn't mean there's one or two boos. In order to hear boos, that's in unison. That means everybody in the stadium feels the same way. Or majority.
And they weren't booing. I don't think they were booing the players. I think what they're booing is this was not what we expected. They're booing the outcome of the game. I mean, there's too many guys, especially in the defense, that people love. Nobody was booing the players. It was just, this was not what I wanted to have happen. Boo!
Yeah, and you can't stop that. There's nothing that you can come in and no matter how much guys respect you and you say, hey, listen, don't boo us. I think it's wrong. You can't stop that. I think instead of that, just address why they're booing. Hey, they booed us at this moment. We stunk, you know, and we're going to move forward. We need to get better. You know, I remember we played the Cleveland Browns. And in 2005, we played Cleveland Browns in Cleveland, and we had the game won. We were Cleveland got the ball with 38 seconds. They scored a touchdown, and we lost, and we were 0-3 that year. And remember the media asking Mike Brown, hey, what's the problem? Why are you guys losing? And his answer was simple. We suck. And we suck. right? We went on to have like a 6 or 7 game win streak after that, you know, and won the NFC conference. So, you know, listen, it's I totally get what Eddie Jackson is saying, but you can't stop what the fans are going to do or how they're going to do it. If you want to stop it, play well. Play well, or just accept the reason why they're booing and change it the following week.
Do you find that, like, fan behavior in general is worse for games like that, like night games, when, especially when it's the only game?
Nah, listen, I my first NFL game when I was a teenager in high school was at the Oakland Coliseum.
And,
oh, boy. Yeah, and if you're anybody who's ever been to a Oakland game, it's one of the rowdiest stadiums and crowds that you could ever be around. You know, everywhere I went, I saw fights here, I saw fights there. And so it was and my I have a buddy who went to my high school who was playing for Cincinnati at the time, and they were playing Cincinnati. And so his whole family had on his Cincinnati gear, you know. And I, after all the fights I saw just walking in to get to my seats, I was worried about them, you know. And I was worried about his family, you know. And if the Raiders aren't winning, the crowd gets even more aggressive in Oakland. You know, if somebody puts a five up, they put their hands up, you better slap it. Just slap it. Just avoid the fight, because if you don't, you know, the guys get they get mad over there, you know. So that was my first experience to pro football, you know. And so, you know, the things that happen here with the Bears, it at least what happens, at least it makes sense. You know, the fans, they're displeased with the team, what's happening with the team that they put, they invest so much of their time and their energy into. You know, they want to see a good fight. They want to see you fight. And if you're not even in the fight, then they're going to get pissed off.
We're talking with Lance Briggs out here at Oak Forest Bowl in Oak Forest. Lance, as the Bears get set to head into, well, they're already in Denver. We saw them all leave with the cowboy hats on and everything. Obviously, we can talk about broadly about things that need to change, a more balanced attack, better play calling. The defense, you know, was great. I think most, you know, there were
could have been greater.
Could have, okay, fine. Could have been better. But I was happy with how the defense played. But specifically, what are you going to look for tomorrow, especially in the first quarter, to see if things have sort of turned around or if they've gotten it together? Because Matt Nagy is really convincing afterwards when he's like, I know what I did wrong. I know how to fix it. Is that enough? Should we? I mean, does he earn the benefit of the doubt?
You know, it's interesting. I watch this TV show. It's called Snowfall. And there's a CIA agent in this TV show. And every time something goes wrong, the one thing he says, he was like, I can fix it. I can fix it. I can fix it. And he does fix it. Like, he does fix it. No lie. He does fix it. And it's some of the most heinous things that happen, you know, that people lose their lives and he has to erase them and this and that. But he's like, look, I can fix it. You know, so when I hear that, when I hear that statement, one, it makes me think of this TV show. And two, it's how are you going to fix it? You know, how are you going to fix it? Like, is it simple? Is it complex? Is it something that you can just say, all right, hey, let's just play harder? You know, because at the end of the day, you know, we all have to look ourselves in the mirror and we have to say, did I give it my all? You know, and if I gave it my all, you know, nobody ever regretted their play when they gave their all. George Halas. Said
that. Make sure good journalisming there, attributing your source. So Joe Flacco last week against the Raiders went 21 for 31 for 268 yards, had one touchdown, no interceptions, and was sacked 3 times. If you're Khalil Mack, if you're Roquan Smith, and you're reading these numbers against the Raiders, who obviously Khalil Mack knows how bad they are. I mean, what are you thinking when you're looking at that?
Eat.
It's time for dinner.
It's time to eat.
Yeah.
Yes. I think Khalil's going to have a monster game. I think Leonard Floyd is going to continue to. I think this is his year. I think this is his. Well, it's a make or break year for him anyway. You know, either you put up or you shut up. But I think he's. You saw some great. I saw impressive football play from him in week one. No doubt. Like, just not – he was unblocked, coming free to the quarterback. He made plays to get to that to the quarterback. He made defensive plays. He had a bull charge. The first time you see a guy like that, you never think he's going to bull charge. And he did it and got to the quarterback. And if you find success from him and Khalil Mack, who are both playing on both opposite sides of the football field, everybody benefits. Everybody benefits. I don't know if Goldman's going to play this week, but if you have two edge rushers that you have to be worried about, and I don't think that the Denver Broncos tackles are that great. You know, I don't think they're as great as the team that the Bears played last week, you know, in the Packers. So with them eating on the outside, that opens up lanes for Roquan. You know, Danny Trevathan, you know, Akeem Hicks. There's going to be a lot of plays. And the good thing about the Bears, they player for player, they're better. They're better than Green Bay Packers, player for player.
Which is why it was so frustrating on Thursday night. So where did you see room for improvement on the defense? Because, you know, we saw Leonard Floyd with three sacks. One was erased by a penalty, but he was terrific. Khalil Mack was predictably brilliant. Roquan Smith looked great. Where did you see you look like you want to say something? What do you want to say?
You already know. Listen. Listen. Yeah, when you have guys that and especially in my mind and all of our minds that are playmakers. There's a lot of playmakers on that defense. The standard that you set has to be one that says we need to score on defense. Whether you have the best offense or the worst offense, defensively you need to be competitive. You need to say, hey, look at ourselves and say, all right, we held them to under 100 yards rushing. We held them to under 200 yards passing. How many times we had a bunch of sacks? How many times did we take the ball away? How many times did we get in the end zone? You know, let's light that end zone up. Let's light the scoreboard up with our play. You know, it bothers me around the country when I watch teams that limit themselves, or they say my defense played great. We kept them to such and such. We made them kick, you know, throughout the game. We made them three and out throughout the game. We made them do three and out. We made them kick. We made them kick here. We made them kick there. But when you're playing great defense, in my opinion, you're taking the ball away. You're making them kick. You're making the game very uncomfortable for your opponent. You're keeping, if you're away, you're making the crowd silent, and everybody is cheering all the time. So there's always room for improvement. And if you want to be great, these are the things you got to hold yourself to a higher standard.
And looking at what Oakland was able to do.
No, you're good.
I was
looking at Maggie because it's her turn to ask a question.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. Looking at what Oakland's defense was able to do, and even what Oakland was able to do offensively, nothing that they could do was that impressive. So it doesn't seem, I mean, it's so hard to tell with one game, but it doesn't seem that Denver is that good of a team, but it's kind of hard to figure out right now, right?
It was a competitive game. You know, things fell the Raiders' way, but, you know, Denver is they're no slouch, and they never have been a slouch of a team. And the one coach that the Bears are running into this week that knows them better than anyone else, knows how to attack them, knows the mentality of Nagy, knows what the ins and outs, and is Fangio. You know, so this is a dangerous game for the Bears. It's a dangerous game, but it's a necessary game. There are a lot of questions that need to be answered. There's a lot of improvement that needs to be shown on TV. And regardless of who's playing, the Bears still, player for player, they're better than Denver. You know, so if you're better than a team, if you play the way you're supposed to, you should win. And I said this last week. I was like, listen, there's more question marks for Green Bay than there are with the Bears. If they go out and they play the way they're supposed to, they win. You know, and they didn't play the way they were supposed to. They lost by a touchdown.
That was the voice of Lance Briggs. He's going to be with us for another half hour out here at Oak Forest Bowl and Cicero in Oak Forest. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got a bunch of questions for Lance, because I don't know if you guys know this, but he was recently nominated for the 2020 Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that with Lance, as well as get to some of your questions as soon as we get back. You can text them to 67011 if they've stuff you're just dying to know. And the only person who can answer it for you is Lance Briggs. The text line is open, 67011. Quick break. We'll be right back here on the Miller Lite Top Draft Show out at Oak Forest Bowl.
Third down, football at the 16-yard line. Snap is back, blitzing again from the deep level, throwing left corner of the end zone, tight traffic. Wow. It's intercepted in the end zone by Adrian Amos. With 1:58 left in the game, the ex-Bear, in tight coverage to Allen Robinson, swipes it.
That was extremely not necessary. Jeff Joniak with the call on WBBM as Adrian Amos intercepts Mitchell Trubisky in the end zone. Mm. The moment when you could hear all of Chicago simultaneously go, oh no.
I think they were doing that before then.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Let's go to bedtime.
We're out here at Oak Forest Bowl with Lance Briggs at the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We got another half hour with him. Yes, we are going to get to the comic book superhero segment of the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. However, before we do that, like we just mentioned before we went to break, Lance has been nominated for the 2020 Hall of Fame, a moment I've been waiting for. I know a lot of fans have been waiting for it. So, Lance, what is the process like for you? Like, do you have to go out and, like, campaign and kiss people's butts and be real political about it? Or do you sort of let someone else take that over for you?
Mm. The word usage there. You know.
All right. Let me rephrase the question. I'll put you in an awkward position.
Shake hands and kiss babies.
What is the process like for you as far as your understanding? I know Brian Urlacher just went through it.
Yeah.
Is he able to tell you at all what to expect?
There's a process, and I'm not as familiar with it, but I learned a bit from Brian's process. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of lobbying, you know, apparently that you have to do for it, and. That's not really my cup of tea. You know, it's not really my wheelhouse. You know, I think that your play during your career should speak volumes for what you're trying to do anyway. But it's the writers pick. The writers, you know, they pick who goes in. So, you know, there's some convincing that has to be done. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that deserve to be in there, you know, and I think Olin deserves to be in there. I think Devin Hester should be first ballot guy. I think Peanut should be in there. And for myself, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for, you know, in a Hall of Famer, it's there. You know, if you're looking for the numbers, it's there. If you're looking for the accolades, it's there. You know, I played 12 years for the Chicago Bears, and it was a great ride. I had a great ride here, and I enjoyed it. You know, fell short of getting the ring, and unfortunately wasn't able to do that. And now we're rooting for a team now that we're hoping that can bring that ring back for us. I'm proud of the work that started back in 1988 when I was 7 years old, and it ended in 2015 when I retired. And when I look back at not just my professional career, but college, high school, and youth, and all of that, and the road, and everything that it took to get there, I'm damn proud of where I came, those that affected me. And help me get to where I am today. So it's just it's awesome, man. Just thinking about it.
Well said.
So when that I saw you put the Instagram post up of the gold jacket,
yeah,
and saying like, okay, the road to this hopefully begins.
Yes.
So I mean, when you first found out that you were nominated and that this whole process was starting, I mean, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Well. In history, usually when something exciting happens, I call my mom. You know, I just call my mom. You know, I call my mom. I send her a text or whatever it is. And I couldn't get a hold of my mom because she wouldn't answer her phone. You know, she's my mom, she lives in she's in Arizona. She's in this is a city called Maricopa, and it's got the worst cell phone coverage. So she doesn't get phone calls in her house. So she has to, like, leave the house to get before a message pops up on her phone. You know, so I ended up not seeing her until or not talking to her about it until I saw her. Literally, physically, she was in the room with me, and I was like, Mom, hey, I got something to tell you. And she was like, oh. I was like, I left a message on your phone, too. You'll get it in a few minutes.
She'll probably save it forever, too.
Yeah.
So, Lance, we've got a guy on the text line, 708 texter, who wants to know what the hardest part was of playing in the NFL.
The hardest part of playing in the NFL, I don't know. It's not easy. It's not for everyone. You know, the hard work. You know, you can't be. To me, football was the best thing about football is the ability to endure. You know, to learn how to endure. You know, you get around coaches that are cussing at you. You know, they're either cussing at you for something that you did bad or cussing at you for something you did good. The conditioning, working through stuff, you know, having late club, you know, where you get in trouble and you have to do extra conditioning and you got tears in your eyes and coaches keep telling you that you have to keep going and you don't think you can go any further and the guy next to you tells you, you know, keeps asking for more. It's the tough part is the parts that you don't see. You know, everybody gets to see the glory, you know, nobody gets to see the story, you know. And so the story is the part where you have to push through and you learn that you're a lot stronger than you ever really thought. And it changes the way that you see not only yourself, but the way you see the world, you know, the way you see the man next to you or the woman next to you. So, you know, football has, I think it has made me an extremely mentally strong person, you know. And if you can endure the worst that a coach can throw at you, you can endure anything.
So something we talked about in the break and wanted to talk a little bit on the air was that Mel Tucker, who is one of your defensive coordinators, yeah, is now the head coach at Colorado.
He sure is.
And when I heard that today, because, I mean, I don't watch a ton of college football, but I happened to see that he was coaching. I thought, you know, that kind of seems like a good fit for him. So I just kind of wanted to hear what your thoughts on him are.
You know, me and Mel had a great relationship. You know, Mel caught a lot of blame. You know, he caught a lot of burden and stuff from the city, you know, in our situation. But the thing about Mel is Mel came into a situation where he had a system that was in place. They were trying to keep that system in place, and with the guys that we had, and you know, we had just paid Henry Melton. You know, we had Stephen Paya. At that time, we had Julius Peppers, myself. We had Peanut, Major Wright, Chris Conte at safety. So we had pieces that were already there. And when we got there, he had looked around and he was like, "I want to keep everything the way that you guys kept it." You know, he was like, "I've been in that system before. I can run that system." And the problem with that year is leading up to that first game or after that first game, majority of those starters got hurt. You know, Peanut got hurt. I got hurt. Henry Melton got hurt. And you have guys that had to plug in because the Bears wouldn't re-sign Brian. So I was the only veteran linebacker that was in that room that knew the system. Everybody else had to learn the system. They were new. And that's the same way at every other position. So it was an unfortunate situation for him because he now had to coach a bunch of guys who this whole summer and in training camp, he was like, "We're money. Like, we're money with our guys. Okay, you know, I can wave my hand. You guys know exactly what to do, you know." Yeah. And now I have guys where I have to coach your every movement. You know, I have to coach your every movement. So it was it sucked for him. You know, he got broad shoulders. He had to take it. You know, it is what it is. But now he's at Colorado. I think they had the most exciting game last week against Nebraska. It was a great game. They came back from behind. I think they were down maybe two or three touchdowns, and they came back from behind and fought and won it at the end. I think it's an exciting scene. I think Colorado is an awesome place. If you can win there, then their fan base is huge, and you can recruit really well to that state.
We're talking with Lance Briggs. We got a few more minutes with him. Lance, we've got a 708 texter who wants to know, if you had to pick one play in your career, what was the most satisfying tackle sack you ever made?
Tackle sack or sack tackle?
Tackle slash sack. You can pick one or the other.
I don't know. It's I don't know. There's a lot, you know. I don't think I want to pick out one particular, you know.
Any quarterback you loved sacking more than others?
No, but there was a play that I have. It's actually in one of the little highlights that they have on the internet. It's quick, though, and they didn't do an instant replay. I remember I got hit from behind. We were playing the Packers, and I got hit from behind. And I, you know, just blindly got hit from behind, and I didn't know who it was, you know, and I popped up, you know, I was just pissed. And I was like, who hit me? Who, you know, I said, who the F hit me? And so, you know, one of the teammates, they came over, they were like, 73. It was 73. And I was so mad that the next play that I, thank God it played out the way it did, too, because I would have been in trouble. Because I was like, I'm shooting this gap no matter what. Like, somebody's going to pay for this right here. And they ended up being a run away. And I hit the guard back into the fullback, who hit himself back into the tailback and made the tackle. my coach is like, great play. Like, great play, man. How did you know? I was like, I just wanted to hurt somebody.
I'm just mad.
Yeah, that's the beauty of football, though. That's the beauty of football. You know, you can do stuff like that, and people cheer for it. They applaud you for it. You know, I got all my stress out on Sundays.
So we have an 847 texter that wants to know if there are any Bears linebackers that Roquan Smith reminds you of.
You know, Roquan is, so I, you know, I let you guys know, you know, this last week was the first time that Roquan started working his way up my list. All right. Everybody has their own list. Okay. Everybody has their own list. You know, Danny Trevathan is still my favorite linebacker on the Bears. But I saw what I saw from Danny Trevathan is very little. Okay. It's very little, but it's important to me as a linebacker. And what I saw was a nastiness. And what I saw after plays, when he made plays, you know, there was a little shove, there was a little push off, there was a little, you know, a little form of maybe a little disrespect, you know, to the other team. You know, that I'm not here for you. I'm here to do what I got to do. And that, just that little bit right there, was enough for me to say, you know what, you're moving up on my board, all right? You know, you're moving up on my board. You know? So Roquan's moving up real quick. I don't think he reminds me of anybody, but he's definitely a player. He's definitely a player on this team, and I think he's a force.
Does he remind you of any linebackers who aren't on the Bears? Is there anyone whose play reminds you of?
You know what, I have my favorite linebackers in the league. You know, my favorite linebacker is Jalen Smith. And, you know, he's a linebacker for the Cowboys. But the reason why he's my favorite linebacker is not because he's a great player. You know, he's a Notre Dame guy. But he's not because he's a great player. But, you know, he plays in the same system that I played in. Mm-hmm. You know, he plays under Rod Marinelli. I get a text from Rod Marinelli before every season talking about, hey, I'm showing them tape on you, big guy. You know, I'm showing them tape on you. I'm telling you what they need to do and this and that, you know. And so, you know, I can relate to where he is and where his eyes are every game. You know, I know where his eyes and where his transfer is and what he has, what the movements are, what he needs to do in order to make plays. You know, and so, you know, it's him, you know, Danny Trevathan, Roquan Smith, those guys are all at the top of my list. Ryan Shazier was another guy who, when I watched him play in preseason his rookie year, he popped out and I was like, whoa. This guy's a stud, you know, and unfortunately he had that injury. And, you know, obviously he's made his way back and he you know, he looks great. And I wish the best for him. But I think right now in the NFL, there's a lot of superb linebackers, and there's a lot of guys that I love to watch, you know. So, you know, I hope they keep that trend and keep doing what you got to do.
Well, speaking of young guys popping out, we got a text from Officer Mike, who's a regular texter of the show. He wanted to share a Doug Buffone story. He says, I was working at Sports Channel in Pennsylvania as a studio cameraman. I was working as a PA, production assistant, studio cameraman. And Doug had just gotten back from Bears practice, and he couldn't stop talking about the new kid who was wearing his number.
Oh.
And he said, forget Michael Haynes, who'd been the number one pick that year. This Briggs kid is going to be a player. Boy, was he right.
Ooh, good old Doug Buffone. See, if you guys don't know, you know, when I was in, when I used to go to training camp, they used to bring me to this RV, and Doug Buffone used to always be in this RV, and I would say, like, my first 4 years, I went to this RV to see Doug Buffone. And the first year I went in to see Doug Buffone, he brought me in, and we sat down, you know, he kind of sat back, and he said, how are things going? You know, and I was like, you know, they're going, you know. And he's like, I know what it's like. And I'm like, what do you mean? Right, like, I don't even know you. He was like, I know what it's like. He was like, I played next to Butkus for a long time. He was like, so I know what it's like. You're playing next to Erlacher, you know. And we just have this conversation where we just talk football, we talk life. And Doug would... He would always say, he would just say, you know what, Lance, he's like, you're a player. You know, he's like, you're a player, you know, and I like to watch how you do it. You know, you do it. We were similar. He was like, he was like, sometimes it's like people will overlook some of the things that you're doing because there's a bigger name that's playing next to you. He was like, but don't take that away from what you're trying to do. You know, he was like, I see it. So, you know, I always appreciated Doug. We shared the same number. We had similar situations. We played next to a guy who had a big name. And it was always fun. It was always comforting to go there because I knew he understood where I was coming from.
We got to take a quick break, unfortunately. But when we come back, we're going to wrap up the Miller Lite Top Draft Show out here at Oak Forest Bowl. This will be the superhero Marvel comic book section of the show, which we always love to do with Lance, who is a huge comic book and superhero guy. So if you got questions, text them to the text line at 670-11. Quick break, and we'll be right back here on the Miller Lite Top Draft Show on 670 The Score.
Beautiful, renovated Lambeau Field. The tundra is not frozen today, Bill.
Well, there is a Santa Claus.
The linebackers, Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs, go to the Pro Bowl. Leon Joe starts for the injured Hunter Hillenmeyer. Favre throws on first down, intercepted for a touchdown by Lance Briggs. Bad mistake by Brett Favre. Fourth interception return for a touchdown by the Bears this season. Third career touchdown for Lance Briggs. Frustration and disappointment for Brett Favre.
Oh, what a beautiful audio clip. That should be a Hall of Fame. What a disappointing day for Brett Favre.
Did you see the commercial?
Which one? Oh, the one where
the Bears.
Yeah. And I saw the Peyton Manning one, too. Do we want Peyton Manning as a Bears fan? I mean,
whatever.
Do we need him as a Bears fan?
No, I didn't understand the whole point of the commercial.
Wrong. Right.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. We're back here at the Oak Forest Bowl for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show, our final segment with Lance Briggs. So, Lance, we like to save the last segment to talk about comic books, ooh, Marvel, DC. So before we get into some of the questions that have come in.
Yeah.
So here's where I am with DC, right? They make great trailers. I don't think they make great movies. Mm. And the whole Joker thing, as well as the Suicide Squad, are these reboots? Are they sequels? How many different versions of the characters are there? I'm completely confused.
Well, the reason for the Joker movie is the character is he's such a powerful character. There's no real superpower, I think, for the Joker, except the fact that he's kind of unkillable, even though he seems to die in the worst ways, but he seems to come out of it. But you know, he's the guy that laughs at death. You know, the thing about him is there hasn't been a real origin story for him.
So here's the question, though: do we want one? I mean, I always sort of like, I always looked at him as like the embodiment of the chaos in Gotham City. And that I don't want to know why he's the way he is. I just like to see him mess with Batman.
I would love to see him. Now thinking about it, now that you just said that, I would actually love to see what made or what influenced him to become, you know, the Joker, you know, the guy that laughs at death, the guy that the antagonist to Batman, you know, the guy that drives Batman crazy. There has to be a history to it. There has to be something that affected him in a specific way. You know, there's something to his history, and over the years that I read comics, I didn't really know. So that's what makes that movie or this movie that's coming out October 4th important.
Okay, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a question from a texter who says, "Hey Lance, I see you're a big fan of Marvel. What is your favorite obscure character and why?"
Obscure.
Obscure.
Obscure character. There's a lot. There's a lot of stuff they're doing with, you know, where they're aging some of our favorite characters and then bringing in, you know, new characters where youth. The thing about Marvel is, you know, it's such a huge company. They just sit in there and they think of every possible superpower you could have, you know. So, and then they create the character and they put them out there. So I think the cool part of Marvel and DC actually is that you have kids now, or like these characters all have kids. You know, you'll see some issues where you'll see Superman and Batman's kids, you know, and you wonder how they're maneuvering through the world and how they're going to become the next superheroes or the heroes of the world, and they're managing the world differently than their parents did, you know. So I think that's the coolest. If you talk about obscure, you're talking about, for me, it's the kids, the youth, and how they differ. You know, even Wolverine has a son, and his son's kind of insane. You know, and the dynamics for every kid and their parent, you know, like Wolverine didn't know he had a son. He didn't know he had a daughter, you know, and then they pop up, boom, and he's like, all right, now you're a dad, so figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the cool part of comics is finding the dynamics. And when you get into it, you want to find out where one character's going, and you want to find out if another one's interesting. Is there a comic book for them? I'll go that way and find out about them, too, so. That's comics for you.
Are you listening to the Wolverine podcast?
No.
Oh, it's really good.
Is that right?
Two seasons, yeah. So I know you're working on a comic book.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about it? As much as you can?
Yeah. You know, the studio, they keep us under wraps, so there's only so many things we can say. We don't want to give away too much. But
so intriguing. Mysterious.
Tell us about the process, too.
The process is cool because it's a creative process. I'm just creating stuff that are my imagination, and I'm working with Kyle Higgins, and we literally just sat down, you know, in one of his favorite little lounges, and just bounced ideas off each other. You know, I bounced ideas, things that I thought, and he asked me, how do you envision your comic or your story? Like, what's the story? What's the basis? And I told him, I was like, the thing that intrigues me the most, you know, in this world is reality versus perception. You know, there's a lot of us who were raised to see the perception, you know, and if you live in a world where the reality isn't in your face, you know, 24 hours a day, then you have a better chance of just living that perception, you know. But if you live in an area where the reality hits you every day, 24 hours a day, then you live the reality, and there's a disconnect between the perception versus reality, and that's what intrigues me the most about life, you know, is if you're somebody who lives the perception and you're now all of a sudden you're thrown out of that perception and thrown into reality. You're what you have always known to be true takes this crazy turn, because this isn't like the reality is. This is how the world works, yeah. You know. Even though, you know, Dad always said that days are going to be you're going to have blue stars and there's going to be sunny days. You know, now I'm learning there's a lot of rain in Seattle. You know, so it's just – so the reality and perception, that was where we started it all off and it just kind of went from there.
One word answer question.
Okay.
From a 563 texter. If Marvel was the NFC and DC was the AFC and the different hero teams were the various conference divisions, which football team would Iron Man represent?
Who?
Can you say that one more time?
Okay, so the AFC and the NFC. Marvel is the NFC. DC is the AFC.
Okay.
And there's different teams on them with different super, like the conference divisions, just like they are.
So the DC's, so the Patriots.
DC's the AFC, right.
There's a, okay.
So who does Iron Man play for?
Who does Iron Man play for? Ooh, this is good.
Iron Man plays for the AFL because they haven't had the merger yet with the NFL.
All right.
He's a zombie.
Okay, so
I think we wanted you to say the Bears.
Yeah.
Right. I know what they want.
By the way, I would think it would be the 49ers because of their high-tech stadium, and I think he would, like, design a better stadium.
I think he'd play for the Rams and hang out with Sean McVay and be part of that goatee crowd.
Ooh. That could be, too.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Okay, so we caught you up on Marvel Maggie and how I am now all in on Marvel movies.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Marvel movie? What is a movie I should, like, go home and watch right now again?
Black Panther is a movie that I watch often.
It's so pretty.
It's right. It's, you know, the way that it was put together and knowing the story of the director, you know, the director, he played football at Sacramento State, you know, which, you know, Sacramento State was right down the street from where I grew up. And you know, so, you know, he was a football player and he discovered film while he was in college, and he knew that this is my calling. Like, this is it, you know. And most kids that come out of high school that think that this is what they're going to do. Most kids that leave college don't leave college in a career that they studied for, you know, which is kind of upsetting because you spend a lot of money going through college and getting your education. For someone to be in college and realize this is what I really love. You know, it was pretty awesome. And then, you know, now getting to the point where, you know, he's done the Creed movies and he did Black Panther was pretty cool. You know, it was pretty cool. And being a Northern California kid, there are some Easter eggs. There's Easter eggs in the movie, you know, that tie themselves to Northern California. So it was cool.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That's interesting stuff. Ryan Coogler, great. That's
cool. Yeah, Ryan Coogler.
Yeah,
like, I'm sorry, I didn't even mention the guy's name.
Well, I didn't, I was like, he's a great director. Until...
that directed great. But... Anonymous.
All right, so we've got a guy who wants to know if you've seen The Boys on Amazon Prime. Everyone keeps telling me to watch it. It looks like a knockoff of Watchmen, but everyone seems to love it.
So the thing about that, so here's Lawrence Holmes. He hit me up about it last week. He's like, hey, have you seen The Boys? It's not a movie that I got excited for because I don't have Amazon Prime. And that's what I told him. I was like, I don't, you know, he was like, oh, it's great. You have to. I was like, I don't have Amazon Prime.
That actually sounds a lot like Lawrence.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly, you know what I mean? He was like, oh, you have to. I don't have Amazon Prime. And I like stopped him in his tracks, you know. And, you know, at that moment, it's like, I'll give you my Amazon account and you can watch it. But he didn't say that, you know. So I'm like, if you listen. It's not going
to
happen.
If anybody wants to give Lance their Amazon Prime login so that he can watch The Boys, you can text it in to the 6711.
Right, because Netflix, I use my mom's account. I use my mom's account, so anything that happens.
How old
Netflix,
are you?
How old am I? What you mean? You're never too old to use somebody's. Why do we all need to use different Netflix accounts? We all, you know, it's
all
for
right.
everyone, right?
Sadly, we have to break. And we have to say goodbye to Lance Briggs, who's been out here with us for the past hour and a half at Oak Forest Bowl for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show.
Yeah.
It's always great to talk to you, Lance. We're going to see you next week out in Woodstock.
Woodstock, Illinois. How far is that, huh?
It's pretty far.
Decent.
I said you can stay at my parents' house if you want. They're not that far.
Are you from here?
I'm from near there.
Near there?
Yeah.
Huh. What's Woodstock known for?
It was where they set the movie
Groundhog Day.
Oh. That's where they filmed it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So you've seen it. You're going to recognize it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
okay.
have to step in a giant puddle. Mm-hmm.
They have a plaque where the puddle was.
Really? Is there a groundhog there?
I don't know yet. I guess I think there is on Groundhog Day.
Yeah. I think they do a Groundhog Day thing now.
They ship them in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they ship them in. All right, so we're going to say goodbye to Lance. Thanks so much for seeing you. It was great talking to you, and we'll see you next week for another Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back here on the Julie Maggie Show.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.